Welcome to episode 24 of the Back to Front show. It's true, we are back like a phoenix from the flames. Isn't that right, Kieran?
That is exactly what it's like.
Yeah.
Just like that.
I've missed the sort of quaint hum of boy races coming to me in my ears from Wells. How is Wells?
Tweeting of birds in a suburban Bath.
Well, it would be if I had the window open. It's more like...
You're more professional than I am.
Well, I know. You do claim, though, that the window is shut, but I don't
know. The window is shut. It's just a rubbish window.
However, you are with canine friend today, so any background noise, I don't know, wet dog...
Or barking. Ears flapping. Or snoring, in fact, because he's snoring. Upside down on his bed.
His bed?
Yeah.
He has his own bed in your office.
Well, dogs are allowed beds.
I didn't see that memo.
Oh. It's just a basket or whatever. What do you call a dog bed, Keir?
A cot.
Okay, he's in his cot.
Good. Enough of that. I was about to say feline friend. He's not canine friend.
He's now woken up as looking at me. What? So you've upset him.
In the way that only dogs can.
Yes.
Like, give me a treat and I'll be quiet. Very much like children, really.
Yeah, exactly like children.
Anyway, enough of the dog. Yes. We are back.
Sorry.
It has been a while, which is...
It has.
It's how we prefix...
I was
prefix...
accused recently by a colleague that we always preface our podcast with, I'm sorry, it's been a long time since we've been away. And he said, like a lax blogger.
A lax blogger, yeah.
I think that was the description.
A lax podder.
Yes, we're lax podders.
Well, we have news on that front, don't we?
We do.
We stand here now, or seated rather, committed to from September, going weekly, and you can call us out if that isn't the case all the way through till 2015.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Happily.
And we will take it
on the chin.
Sitting down.
The criticism.
Yeah. From our two listeners, but it's all good. But so we are back. We have been away. No excuses.
No, but here's the excuses.
houses, as in buying, selling, doing up.
Yeah.
Real work.
Man's work.
Real work. No. Not the houses. Obviously, that is man's work. But like jobs.
Oh, real work. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. Real life.
Paid work.
A remunerated employment.
Yes.
Bit of travel. School holidays on my part. Well, not for me, for my children, or one of them. which means lots of ferrying around and occupying of time. We had a chat and we've decided that, it's a worthy cause. So we are back. But we have a few changes. One change, I guess, in as much as we are going weekly, and we'll decide on the day, probably a Thursday. I think we'll push him out on a Thursday.
You're keen on a Thursday.
Thursdays are nice.
Yeah.
But we've effectively taken the old show, which was often running over an hour, splitting it in two. So we'll be doing a weekly kind of deep dive. Get your rabbit ears out and wrap them around that. 1 week, and then our normal Lynx banter the next.
So twice the opportunity to talk gibberish.
Twice.
Yes.
In one, yes.
Yes.
Yes, it's all good.
See, the worst thing could happen is that they both run to an hour.
Well, which won't happen, because I'll just cut you off.
Okay, yeah.
Because let's face it is you that rambles.
Yeah, what are we, 10 minutes in now?
just over four.
Okay, oh, that's fine.
Anyway, on with the show. It's very pleasant to be back behind the Yeti, actually.
It is.
We won't get too many interruptions from dog or postman or boy racer.
All the interruptions on my end.
Of course. I mean, I'm in a professional studio here with egg boxes surrounding me.
Yeah, yeah.
Assistants bringing me, water.
To keep my
larynx lubricated and so forth.
Anyway, but, moving swiftly on.
Right. So given that we have had a period of transition, I thought this week we should or could... And you kind of went, okay. Talk about transitioning.
Yeah.
So, but broadly speaking, kind of when you get new jobs or your focus is changing, maybe you've been known for one thing, but you now want to be known for something else, or your interests are changing, and you're sort of blogging or tweeting, sharing links about different things.
Yeah.
And this was on the back of a podcast that I listened to and of that Sean Johnson from the Freelance Web talked about a lot, from a guy called Sean McCabe, whose website is Sean Wes. And I don't actually know why, if his name's Sean McCabe, he goes by the name Sean Wes. I've not been able to find that out.
It's like Neil Tack.
Well, yeah, well, Neil Tack, that's his middle name, Tack, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Neil Tack Kinnish.
Yeah, Kinnish.
Kinnish.
Yeah. No vowel between the K and the N.
No?
No, just Kinnish.
Oh, it sounds kind of, I don't know. I wonder where that's from. Maybe he'll tell us. yeah, Sean Wes podcast, number 92, to be precise. He's actually outputting. He only started podcasting just over a year ago, and he's already up to about 102.
Puts us to shame.
It does, yeah. But the podcast in question, number 92, four keys to growing an audience when you feel like you're not getting recognition. And I don't put ourselves in that boat, obviously.
Obviously.
But he talks about four key things, such as curation, consistency, in other words, frequency, quality, and that's the value that your output represents to others, and then time, as in patience in growing your kind of audience. But with that, I you know, that got me thinking about how I sort of represent myself online, and given that my focus is much more on Shopify and e-commerce and that kind of stuff now, I sort of went through you know, a few days of penning some sort of strap lines to try and describe yourself. And I remember it may have been very early on, maybe episode one or two, where we talked about the flowery bio on Twitter and so forth, and how difficult it is to actually concisely sum up, I guess, a persona online. But
because so few of us have just one
hat. That's the thing. And in that particular episode, they talk about the case where maybe you've got a lot of interest, but if someone, you know, if you start talking about film one day and then coffee the next and then travel the next, you know, people are going to get a little bit confused. And I'm not quite sure. I mean, it's definitely worth a listen, and I'll link it up in the show notes, but yeah, whether I actually agree with that. But I thought, you know, we have all these outputs. You have Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, blogging, that seems to have a minor resurgence at the moment. But you know, how you represent yourself online, I guess if you're thinking about designers, they always talk about portfolios in terms of put the work in that you want to be known for. And I think maybe, you know, there's a conversation around how you represent yourself online if you're not outputting design work, so that you start sharing links, creating content, attending events that are particular to your interests. You know, you become known for that kind of thing. And I think by chance that's happened for me in terms of the Shopify work. And I think with yourself as well, it's more about it's less about, say, PHP and Rails and that kind of thing, and it's about, you know, as we jokingly call it, the intersection of film and web. So yeah, what do you think? I mean, how have you changed the way that you talk about yourself or represent yourself?
Oh yeah, definitely. Bios? Massively, yeah. I think that there's also, just to take a step back, there's also, I definitely 100% agree that you have to, just like a designer, you have to put out the stuff that you want to be known for. So whether that's just retweeting, you know, news stories about a specific subject, or whether that's, you know, getting into discussions on Twitter, etc., about that subject, you definitely have to be focusing on the things that you want to be known for. But I think some people do that more subconsciously than others.
Right.
I think that, you know, some people consciously, and clearly you can see it on Twitter or Facebook or whatever. I wouldn't know, not being a Facebook man. They consciously put out content, and you can very clearly see that they're doing that on a given subject, and they're clearly, you know, looking for followers and looking for engagement in that specific subject area.
How do you think that represents itself? I mean, how do you know? And I guess the other question is that a bad thing, or neutral, or good? Or
I guess the thing that I don't think it's a bad thing at all to start off with, but I think it's, I guess, you know, let's take someone like Daniel Howells, for example. Now, he may step in and tell me that this is wrong. You know, he may reply to this if he listens and says, you know, I don't do that. But the thing that I believe he does is that he consciously, you know, Instapaper stuff, reads them. If he likes that content, he then tweets that content. But it's all on a very specific design web focus, you know?
Sure.
He wants to be known for that. You don't necessarily see Daniel tweeting stuff about international politics, or, you know, I mean, maybe that's just, I haven't noticed that, but, you know, my gut reaction is he's the sort of person that has a very focused interest, and he makes sure that that's the, he's on message, shall we say, right? He's always on message.
But that's the message of his own making, in effect, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, he's decided that is what he wants to do. Whereas I think that, so that's what I mean by me feeling that that person's consciously trying to build an audience in that area. And that's not a bad thing for me, because I follow Dan because he puts out good stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas I think some people just do it completely subconsciously as part of who they are, and don't necessarily think about, you know, I want to mine this niche. This is what I want to be doing.
Yeah.
And I think that's when you get the, maybe predominance of one type of article being tweeted or one type of, subject matter being discussed. But, there's also the bits about playing, you know, guitar, or about painting, or about, you know, a particular football team the person seems, you know, wants to, it follows. That's when you start to get the sort of, tapestry, shall we say, of different subjects.
Oh, I like, you know? That. Yeah, yeah. I guess it's that feels more human.
It does,
in a way. So, yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I guess you know, I've been very quiet on Twitter of late, and but you know, I use it to mine a lot of links and, you know, recommendations, as much as I still, being of a certain age, you know, have RSS feeds and things like that. So I have a whole range of ways of consuming other people's, there's the dog, content. So, and, you know, I'll do that in a number of ways. So I will, follow links on Twitter. I will, you know, look at, RSS feeds of people whose blogs I still follow, or, you know, other forms of, you know, tech blogs and things like that. And then I'll often send most of those to Pocket, which is the kind of Instapaper by another name
version. Yeah.
And I find that really useful, because sometimes when you're looking at links on the phone, a lot of the things like Twitter have integration with that. Or you can simply be on a web page and sort of fire up your mail client on the phone and just sort of send it to ad at getpocket.com.
Yes.
And it adds it to your feed. And so then I'll go through, maybe of an evening or, you know, first thing, and actually read those articles more in depth, and then sort of more recently start sharing those. And I think a lot of people share stuff that they don't actually read, whereas I tend to share stuff that, you know, I have read. And, you know, you can tell that when people retweet stuff, that when you've seen the original tweet, there's no way they could have read that 3,000-word article. So I think that's an interesting one, isn't it? People.
Do you see John Borthwick's, from, you know, BetaWorks?
Right.
John Borthwick wrote an article on Medium, obviously.
Of course.
That is entitled, "You Gotta Read This." And it's basically exactly what you're just talking about media consumption. And one of the clever things he's done is he seems to be sort of obsessed with putting himself between us, the audience, and content of any kind. So take Instapaper, for example. He bought Instapaper. He didn't produce it from, you know, the ground up, I don't think.
No, that's right. They bought it out, didn't they? From Marco, is it Marco?
I'm not sure.
Marco Armit.
Yeah, so he basically, it's a very long post called "You Gotta Read This," and we can link it up in the show notes, but you have got to read it. Like, it's incredible the amount of, he basically has stats on how long someone looks at a page before they then share it.
Right, interesting.
The average, I think there's something, average time, something 15 seconds or something. Like, it's, you know, not enough time to even read, you know, the opening few paragraphs. It's almost like they read the headline and just tweet the thing.
Yeah.
But there's bags of more, content in there, and he's using Chartbeat. His other acquisitions, or his other companies, are obviously Bitly, which is his, and then Chartbeat and Upworthy.
Right, okay.
So there's, and then Instapaper, so that he combines all the data from those, and he has a team working on the combination of that data to get more information about how we actually consume media. And there's a really interesting a couple of really interesting graphs where he shows the difference between, you know, a bit like, you know, that the famous tipping point graph, where there's a big chunk of people who say, "Oh my God, look at that headline tweet." And then there's a huge valley of nothing, where people read a tiny bit of the article, get bored and don't bother doing anything with it. You know, too long, didn't read.
Yeah.
And then there's a big spike at the end, actually a bigger spike than anything else, of, you know, read the whole article, loved it and tweeted it. So, you know, it's just really interesting, like, breakdown of how we act around media. And I found it interesting because of the whole video thing as well.
Yeah, of course. I mean, it still amazes me. You'll dip in and, you know, on a particular topic, say on Twitter, and then you'll see sort of a bunch of retweets and you'll think, wow, that's just come out. You can't have read it.
yes.
I'm not sure about that. I mean, I think it's interesting, isn't it, though? But you do look to these people, and I mean, does that matter? So you've got someone who is kind of an arbiter or curator of taste or on a particular topic. Maybe they, you know, maybe they're reading it later. Maybe they're adding it to Instapaper, but they're sharing it because they think that their audience is, you know, it's going to be interesting to them.
And it's interesting. I've seen a few quite high profile people called out about, you know, did you actually read this article? Because, you know, it's, you know, in some way it's not considered appropriate, whether that be, you know, sexist, racist, whatever. There's something in there that's a bit dodgy, or wrong, you know, just plain wrong. The data's not right. And someone calls them out on that. And I have actually seen people apologize and say, you know, I tweeted that a bit hastily.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. Interesting one. So do you think, I mean, when we're going back to sort of, I guess if you're not outputting design work, I mean, code's very difficult to portfolioize, for want of a better word. You've got GitHub and things like that, but it's a lot more involved. You can't really see the beauty in the code until you've actually start playing with it and really getting in depth. Whereas with design, you know, it's a much more, I guess the impact is quicker. You get that reaction to it, don't you? A certain style.
Yeah, I kind of think that's the way that Chris Coy and both Remy and Chris Coy are going with CodePen and JSBin respectively. You know, that they're, I kind of feel like they're drifting towards Dribbble for code. You know, yes, obviously it's a great little playground. It's great to show people stuff on it as well. But, you know, I've got a feeling they could move into this area of sort of portfolios of little snippets of code that work and are interactive, and people can see how you built stuff, you know?
Yeah, that's true. But you know, yeah, I agree with that. And I think, Dribbble's done a lot for sort of sharing and showcasing.
And discovery as well.
And discovery as well. Yeah. But so, you know, we have these opportunities where we're not maybe design focused and, you know, code isn't still of that thing where it gives you that, I guess you have the, you know, the gaffer dazzler is the thing that you can throw up that's all animation and it's like, you know, just as the boss is walking by, isn't that great?
Yeah.
On CodePen and stuff. But beyond that, like, I actually got that expression from, I went to some talks years ago at the Design Museum in London. They had an exhibition all around Formula One. Yeah. And they had two evening talks. One was by Adrian Newey, who's the chief designer for Red Bull now. But they had one by a guy called Patrick Head, who was one of the original founders of Williams Formula One team.
Oh, yeah.
And he's a bit more old school. And he sort of said, yeah, you know, all these young designers have these gaffer dazzlers, these kind of liquid computational fluid dynamics things that they pop up just as, like, you know, the sponsors are walking by. And then they go back to the real sort of crunching data stuff. But oh, that looks interesting. But but yeah, so I mean, you know, beyond the code examples or you know, the design stuff, I guess that one of the main ways that we can represent ourselves and build an identity is through things like blogging, but principally, you know, social networks like Twitter and to a lesser degree Facebook, because that's much more of a, you know, people, you know, reciprocating follows and friendships,
emotional content.
Yeah,
emotional
apparently. So I mean, how much stock do you take in what people write in their bios, and have you got any thoughts on maybe how you've changed yours?
It's interesting. I'm a massive bio fiend, so the first thing I do when I
it's never something I've called you before. I shall start
when I when somebody you know points me at a Twitter user, or if I see a tweet that's interesting, the very first thing I'll do is read their bio. And I'm actually often a bit frustrated if it says, you know, mustache wearing, bakes cakes and loves Portland, Oregon. You know, I don't.
Not that you're lumping any of those attributes together in any way, shape, or form.
No. fix your riding. You know, the
you had to
drop it in. Those things don't interest me that much. You know, yeah, it's fantastic that you've got interests outside your work, but clearly you're, maybe this is my, my bias, as it were, towards Twitter. Like I very much, follow people for two reasons. Either they are, well, three reasons, I guess, friends, you know, if they're film related or if they're tech related, right? So I want to know, you know, and normally that relates to their job. There's very few people who tweet about film or tweet about tech who are not either working in those spaces. And it does actually frustrate me when I see someone write something really smart, but then their bio doesn't tell me who they are, because they're almost too cool to put their job title down, which actually I am I'm one of those people right now.
But we can't talk about that.
No, we can't talk about that at the moment. But yeah, I put a lot of stock in people's Twitter bios because, you know, it's for me, it's pretty much the only reason, you know, only way I know whether I want to follow them or not.
Do you think there's room there? I mean, I've recently changed mine. I've changed it quite a few times over the last month or so.
Yeah, sure.
Just to sort of say, so it currently reads, and this may well change by the time this goes out. So at Shopify Designer Advocate. So at Shopify is obviously a handle, so that's linked up. So that would take people to Shopify. So it reinforces that. Occasional web dev, which is kind of true, but you laugh at.
Yes.
And we can discuss that. Co-host at Back to Front Show, which is obviously linked up as well.
Yeah.
And then I've put actually what people can expect to find on my Twitter feed. It's been very inactive of late, but then I've started to, having listened to the Sean Wedd stuff and sort of realizing, coming to terms with the value I get from Twitter and how I could contribute back, I've put what I tweet about. So tweets about e-commerce, web industry, podcasting, travel, publishing, and culture. Culture really should read, you know, beer, cocktails, and coffee, but there wasn't enough characters.
Sure.
I think that's a little bit too flowery.
And not that interesting, because, you know, who in our industry isn't into those things?
Yeah. So I've kind of have the same on my website now. I wish
to be too harsh.
But it's true. So, you know, I've put on my website header, you know, I write about and share links on e-commerce, web industry, podcasting, travel. Mm-hmm. So it kind of reinforces it there. And I think, you know, hopefully if you come to read my bio, you know, it's got a link to my site where that's reinforced. You can kind of now know. And I'm really, that's what I talk about. I don't talk about too many personal things on Twitter, never really have, and that's not a conscious choice. I think that's just a more organic way that I've used it. I will Instagram photos of kids and stuff, my own, hasten to add, as well as, you know, out and about at events or some, you know, some nice architectural things like that. So in a way, my Instagram feed is more more the personal side of what, you know, my output, whereas Twitter mm-hmm. and my website now, which I've started, you know, adding links to as well, is more about the work side of me.
I think you're far more intentional about what you do on Twitter than I am, for example.
You're much more, you know, an emotional outpouring of angst.
I think that, you know, it has to be quite interesting really interesting article for me to actually tweet something, you know, to retweet it or to tweet it out. You know, I have to be really moved to do that at the end of the reading. Like I was moved to tweet Borthwick's article about, you know, media consumption. That was really interesting to me. It's like right on my street. But, you know, my Twitter bio, on the other hand, is far more sort of vague, intentionally vague at the moment, actually. But mine just says film plus web.
What, no mention of the word intersection?
No. Just film plus web.
And then you've got some kind of moody hero image at the top there.
What
film's that from? Have you got copyright on that?
It's not from a film. I have got copyright on that, yeah.
Is that your own film? Your own own photo?
No.
What was it from then?
It's from, what's that? I can't remember what that stock image site's called.
You paid money for this?
I did, yeah, but it was the background for a site that I built that didn't launch.
Really?
I can't remember what that site's called. I was going to say Dissolve, but that's the video site, isn't it?
And you've got a photo of Harry Roberts.
A what?
You've got, like, I'm watching. Yeah, you've. It must have been that.
Oh, I've tweeted a link to something and it's pulled the image out of it, has it?
There's Harry. Look at him. I think the good news is he is no longer eligible for young front end ninja of the year.
Everyone else is safe. But I've equally got a picture of Jamiroquai on there.
Do you know he nearly ran me over once?
Did he? Claim to fame.
Which one's the Jamiroquai? Oh, him. There he is. Yes, it was. Actually, I've seen him twice, IRL. First time was in New Cross near the Sainsbury's, New Cross Gate, if anyone knows it, back in the mid to late 90s. He pulled up a little bit too fast in a Ferrari, which you didn't often see in New Cross Gate, for anyone who knows it, just as we were crossing the zebra crossing there. And then the other time was when I was at the BBC for a filming of something. I think it was a chat show. Went through a spate of getting free tickets to go and see chat shows.
I thought you were on a chat show.
No, God, no, no. I think it might have been...
Parky.
Well, I did go and see Parky, and it had Robbie Williams was on it, and two other people.
When was this? Late 90s, early noughties?
Yes. Right. And he left in a sort of powder blue Rolls Royce, sort of with his head out of the sunroof, shouting
understated
everyone.
Then, yeah?
On both occasions. But anyway, what were we talking about?
My Twitter bio.
Yes, so film and web.
It just says film and web, yeah. Mm. But it's purposely vague for reasons we won't go into.
But you could, you could purposefully put more.
To be honest with you, I got Twitter bio writing fatigue.
Yeah, it's interesting though, because since I've gone back to sort of only very recently, over the last month or so, tweeting a bit more, sharing a few more links, I'm looking, my follower count hasn't gone up, and that's really not the motivation anyway. But most of the recent people who are following me tend to are much more in the area of e-commerce, online sort of selling and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So maybe that's to do with kind of retweets and people reading that. And so they've come and they've realized that, yes, I talk about these kind of things. E-commerce being the first one, and probably the one I talk about most, because that's what I do on a daily basis now with Shopify.
Yeah.
So maybe, that's interesting as well.
I do find it interesting when you change your Twitter bio, like the keywords that are in there, you tend to get followers in that area.
Yeah.
I don't know whether there's something organic that happens there or whether it's being... that's happening algorithmically somehow. For example, I had PhD in my bio at one point, and I got a lot of fellow students who are studying for their PhD following me.
That's interesting.
So I don't know whether that's just people searching for the term PhD and following people, or whether it's, or whether it's somehow Twitter surfacing that.
Yeah, maybe. Who knows? They're changing their algorithms all the time, aren't they? Apparently there was some furore recently about seeing retweets of people that from your followers, of people that they follow that you don't, and so forth. So
yeah,
it'd be interesting to see. On a side note, I actually read Biz Stone's book recently whilst on holiday.
Hatching.
Is that
his?
Things a little bird told me, or something like that.
Right.
It's an easy read. I don't mean that in a negative sense. You can read it quite quickly. Big words, lots of spacing, lots of leading. But no, it's quite interesting. If you want to get the backstory on Twitter and what he's up to now, it's quite interesting. I guess it is what you share and how you share it, I guess, can define you. But I guess the other question is really, to what end? A lot of people do it organically, and they have, they're sharing their interests. It just happens to be web, and obviously that then leads to offers of writing articles or work opportunities. Have you found that any changes in the way that you sort of talk about what you do online has resulted in work opportunities? Has that ever been a motivation? Or
that's an interesting one. I automatically think of tech work, but that's not actually really true. In fact, tech work has normally come out of work relationships that I've had, like face-to-face relationships. If anything, I think that the film tech work, the stuff where it's film companies trying to get a foot on the tech ladder, They have, that work has come far more through my website and Twitter, etc. And I think that's just through the fact that I did a startup in that space, and I got a big following from doing that. Not a big following, as in, you know, in terms of, you know, in comparatively speaking, but the majority of my followers are from that. And I think that is probably the area where what I tweet about and, you know, the famous demonstration of knowledge type thing has helped, and writing articles for Filmmaker and those kind of people has all come about because of doing Open Indie and then relationships born out on Twitter. Because people learn that you are knowledgeable in that area and then ask you questions and then ask you to write an article, and someone reads that article and then there's a job offer, you know, and there's that sort of organic network effect.
Yes, I think that's right. And you know, whilst you're talking about that, I was also thinking about how the fact that, you know, followers to a certain degree are not a great currency. I don't believe.
No.
But what can happen is if you have this online presence and you're presenting yourself in a certain way, you meet people, you know, IRL, you forge these relationships, and then when they, as one inevitably does, goes and sees what you've, you know, what you've done online, you'll go to your Twitter feed and it'll be, yeah, tweets about e-commerce, web industry or film and tech, and you've got these articles that you've linked up, or, you know, they go to your blog, they can see that, yeah, it's not just a single page site with, you know, the same picture on your Twitter feed and so forth. It's you've got some articles, you've got some links, you're talking about stuff. It kind of, I think, has that effect. So it has the discovery effect. People can, you know, through links or whatever, find your site. But then when you meet people, you make business relationships, they can go back and they can see that, you know, you're reinforcing that knowledge that you've demoed in person by the way that you're writing and curating and sharing and that kind of stuff.
Mm. I've equally noticed that you can build a rather large following on things like Tumblr just by churning out content that isn't yours at all, but is just, you know, of interest to a community. So, for example, horror, the horror film community, like if I'm churning out artwork, you know, poster art and stuff for that, just because I like it, I'm interested in it, on Tumblr, and you can build a huge following and you're not producing anything.
That is fascinating, isn't it?
You're just churning out 1970s posters, or, you know, just churning out original artwork done by artists, contemporary artists of classic horror, or whatever it might be. You know, I've got a friend who does it for coffee. He just churns out coffee branding.
Wow.
You know, so it's just like, all he does is take photographs of coffee branding he sees, that is original, but then he also just finds stuff online that he likes, you know, Pinterest or whatever, and he sticks it on Tumblr. And then there's this, you know, he starts building this big following, and it's, and they don't know anything about him personally. These guys don't know anything about me personally. And I don't even do it extremely regularly, but when you're doing it regularly, the follow account does start to just, amass on things like Tumblr.
Well, I mean, what's your motivation for sharing? I mean, I think this is interesting. We've kind of accepted it as a norm, you know, this whole kind of curation and sharing. And when you take a step back and think, you know, why am I doing this? I mean, is just natural human instinct to share good stuff because it's interesting? Or do you think some people have...
Of reasons, really. I mean, you know, in terms of the horror stuff, I think it's just because I really like poster artwork, and I started it just as a sort of, as a curation angle of just, you know, this is the best stuff that I found. Whereas the stuff on Twitter, when I'm talking about film and tech, I think that's more like, I think this article's really good. Chris Dorr, for example, writes incredible articles about how tech is changing the film industry, and I regularly retweet or tweet his stuff. And I guess that's a sort of, like, you know, rightly or wrongly, I want to be associated with Chris because he's a smart guy.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, there is that kind of, this is a smart guy, I'm a smart guy by reading and retweeting, and
but it also consuming. Builds relationships. You know, like I always thought that about Kickstarter. You know, and I'm not unashamed to say that I know it didn't do it purposely, but But the net result of backing independent filmmakers on Kickstarter was that I got to have relationships with them, you know. So, and that wasn't to build my business or anything. That was just because I was interested in what their problems were and how I could solve them when I was doing Open Indie. So, you know, you back a filmmaker's film, you back it genuinely. You want the film to be made. That's great. But there is a net result, which is that they normally will contact you on Twitter and say thank you, and then you follow each other, and then you start to build a relationship. And then when you need insight into, you know, the problems indie filmmakers face, you've got 50, 100 indie filmmakers that you have some sort of relationship with, too, that you can approach.
Yeah, no, that's very true.
I think you can take an action on one social platform, if you can call Kickstarter a social platform, because I think they've tried to make it social, but it isn't really. And you can take that onto another platform and form a relationship there, because I think there's less barrier on something like Twitter. But, you know, there's a very low barrier in terms of, you know, at so-and-so, thanks for backing my project.
And I think, again, you know, the fact that you've been tweeting about film and tech or whatever it is, whatever topic you're interested in, people can then, you know, validate you and your interests by going back and looking at your timeline, looking at your blog and that kind of stuff. Yeah. Like, I guess that's, you know, in the Sean West podcast, when I was listening to that, when they started talking about, you know, if you're tweeting about, you know, Formula One 1 minute, web tech the next, coffee the next, travel the next, people are, it's inconsistent. I think, whilst I don't necessarily agree that you need a separate account if you want to tweet about coffee, although if you're overarching, you know, if you're tweeting 50% coffee photos and 50% tech, it might make sense to break that out. I think the odd thing interspliced is absolutely fine, in my opinion.
I completely agree, but I think I follow people, not brands.
Yes, true.
I tend to, if somebody says, you know, look at, I don't know, back in the day, Square.
Yeah.
You know, look at Square, it's incredible. If I didn't already know about Jack Dorsey, I'm far more likely to hunt down, find Jack Dorsey and follow him than I am to follow the Square's Twitter account.
Just for the record, other mobile payment options are available.
Indeed. Including Amazon, who are undercutting a company who are losing money. But we'll we'll get into that.
Other ones.
Because Amazon may hunt us down and prevent us from doing work in the industry ever again.
Don't worry, we're registered in Luxembourg as a podcast. It's fine. So what about, just quickly for the sort of last 5 minutes or so, just picking up on those four key points of... And again, we talked about this about transitioning, and this is about...
I want to talk about transitioning, because that was the...
Yeah, and this is about, you know, I think the transition here is how we've both changed the way that we maybe present ourselves, you know, online and digitally. And I think that's, you know, that's kind of part conscious and part circumstance. You know, jobs have changed. Certainly on my side, there's less of a focus on kind of side projects and things like that, just because, you know, real work is... kind of not real work, I don't mean that demeaningly, but like, you know, my role has changed and broadened out, so
more responsibility at work
and you know, it's an interesting space, and I've been reading a lot about it, so naturally, and you know, for a while I was like, well, I want to talk more about e-commerce and, you know, the sort of online selling and small businesses, less about maybe publishing and side projects and that kind of thing. And it was kind of like, well, that's kind of what people knew me for. But actually, you just take the leap. You can reposition yourself and see what happens. And I think it kind of reinforced me, because I was started to get people out of the blues, like, oh, if you want Shopify stuff in the UK, speak to this guy. And so it was kind of a natural progression. So actually, you know, people do know me for that now more than the other stuff, which is fine. But yeah, I just wanted to pick up on the four sort of things, and I think we've covered most of them. This is from Sean West podcast episode 92, where he talks about curation. We've talked about why you want to curate, or why one should curate, and how it can reinforce your sort of profile online and align yourself, I guess. Talked about quality and the value, you know, I think in terms of it's a natural instinct to share and share good stuff that you've benefited from. That's very much around our industry as well. But they talk about time as the key point four, and that's in, like, you know, depending on what you know, building an audience and having patience. I'm not necessarily so concerned with that. Not that I don't think it's a good thing, but the one I really wanted to pick up on last was consistency and which they describe as frequency. and this is something I think we failed at, with this show. You know, we picked up some traction, and then for whatever reasons, we just disappeared.
Yes.
And do you think a lack of consistency, or a lack of, like, you know, announcing that you're going to be away for 2 weeks because you're on holiday, or, you know, suddenly no tweets, and then, you know, I started tweeting again more recently. Someone said, "Oh, wow, you're on Twitter again." And I was like, "Yeah." What do you think about consistency? Do you think as human beings we rely on consistency? You know, if you're going to say you're going to blog every Thursday, if you don't, do you think it loses a bit of not authenticity, but trust? Or
yeah, I think it depends on what it is. You know, I mean, I had a friend of mine say to me recently that, you know, he doesn't mind if a podcast is irregular, for example, because, and you know, unless it's, you know, the news, he doesn't need it to be regular, which I find quite interesting. But, you know, I think generally consistency will bring you the best results. So, you know, Gary Vee's a classic example of this.
Absolutely.
Gary Vee, and he's also a classic example of transitioning. And actually, I think it's Ask Gary number 9 or something. We should link up in the show notes, because he talks about why you shouldn't be. You know, he said he could have come on Twitter as at Wine Library TV, or he could have come on Twitter as at Wine Guy, and he said, but if I'd done that, then I'd have to set up a new account called at Ask Gary or at Business Guy. For this new show he's doing, which is business question related. So, you know, he said that the perfect thing for transitioning there was that he was just him. And yeah, there are, you know, people are multifaceted, and he has a lot of knowledge about wine, but he also has a lot of knowledge about business. And so people who watch Wine Library TV are, you know, bound to pick up on the fact that he's a smart businessman, and, you know, he's writing books in that field. So that's how he transitioned into that space. He's also the master of consistency. You know, he regularly, you know, crushes it, as he says, and puts out regular content without fail. So Wine Library TV, I can't think, was it every week?
Yeah, I mean, it was
regular anyway. And his new thing, he's been doing almost daily.
It's unbelievable.
It's unbelievable. But he's now just taken 2 weeks off. But he said in number 10 or number 11 or whatever, the last podcast, video podcast, was, he said, I'm going to be away for 2 weeks. So, you know, just setting expectations now. You're not going to get a daily video from me while I'm in Europe or wherever he is. And then he actually, I saw him on Twitter putting a Twitter out of office on. So his last tweet says something like, I'm away for 2 weeks. You won't get any out replies for 2 weeks. So he's setting expectations all the time.
Yeah.
Which plays into consistency. So people believe him to be consistent because he doesn't, doesn't just disappear for 2 weeks and then people go, where's Gary? Because he knows that his stock will drop during that time if he does that. Whereas if he sets people's expectations, his stock will just be in stasis for 2 weeks, then he'll come back and keep climbing, which is what he wants.
Interesting. Yeah, he's I mean, in our show notes, the two guys that I'd highlighted, you know, people that do it well, I mean, Sean McCabe does it really well. He's done all sorts, but he became known as a letterer, and he started teaching lettering, and he's got a course called Learn Lettering. But now if you look at his website, half of it is devoted to this kind of making a living out of your passion, doing things that you want to do, making a living. And he's obviously a young guy, but the amount of advice and thoughts he's got is you know, incredible. And the quality of his newsletters, and he talks about why he does it, and I think, you know, even if you are calculated, and there's nothing wrong with that, or you have a lot of foresight in how you interact online, you know, there'll come a point where that audience trusts you, you build up the trust, and then maybe you're launching a product or a service or a workshop or something like that, whether it be paid or free. And, you know, that slips nicely into the flow of what you're talking about. And it doesn't kind of feel, oh, he's tweeting because he's selling me something, you know, which a lot of people, I don't mind being sold to, but we've talked about that before. I don't mind advertising. But a lot of people, and I fully understand why, feel that, oh, yeah, now, you know, you know, you've not tweeted for ages, now you're just bombarding me with sales links, you know, it's like, well, that's not cool. Whereas, like, you know, if you've built up the trust, the audience, you've shown your kind of expertise, the kind of things you write about, the kind of things you talk about, and then, you know, you're adding value by a product or a service, I think it feels a lot more kind of, it's thought about, but it's a lot more natural in a way.
Yeah.
Would you agree?
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I think the, it's interesting that transition from just being a, because I've not done this, I've not been a sort of commentator on a certain subject and then transitioned into being a producer of that specific thing. You know, I guess the closest comparison is sort of music. It's also a high fidelity thing, isn't it? The professional critic becomes a professional. So you start producing. So that's that in itself is a big thing. And I think that one of the nice things about our industry, and I've got another rant about a separate rant about sort of sense of entitlement in our industry. But the nice thing about our industry is that people do accept that. They do accept someone who formerly was just sort of commentating on a subject, and then that person stepping up and producing something that's a product that's asking for money.
Yeah.
You know, I've learned from my experience of being an observer, and I have produced this, and we're very open to that as an industry. Whereas I think things like music and film and stuff, it's a big thing if a quote unquote professional critic steps up and makes a film or makes an album.
Yeah, true.
So, you know, I almost think that that's the right way around to do it, is to sit there being the curator of content or the professional commentator on startups and startup culture, and then to go out and then produce something.
Yeah, interesting. Well, you know, one of our key changes with the new format is we'd love to get more feedback. We'd love to know what you know, if you're listening and you've purposely transitioned, or you look back and you think maybe that as it turned out, yes, you made this transition, it was a bit more organic, whether you think a lot about how you present yourself online, or whether you don't think at all, and you know, you can write things like, you know, amazingly good looking mustachioed fixie riding coffee lover from, I don't know, East London, and that's cool, you know, or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's just a representation of how you're feeling at the time that you wrote it, that kind of thing. So maybe we'll put comments on the site. Hey, do people still do that? Do they do that? I don't know.
I've not seen comments since about 2008.
I got a couple on my site recently. Yeah, just two though. One of which was my reply. But anyway, well, we have the Facebook page. We have the Twitter.
Do we have a Facebook page?
Yes, you're all over it, mate.
Have we talked about this? Honestly,
yeah. Anyway. Zuck wrote to me saying, "Well, did you not see?" He said, "Welcome back, Kieran."
Oh, did he? Great.
Yeah,
yeah.
I think he asked you to do the ice bucket challenge as well, but I'm not quite sure when. But anyway, we'll see. But yeah, so that's you know, episode 24, transitioning, talking about how you represent yourself online, mm-hmm. how we've transitioned consciously, subconsciously, without thought. But we have a few more topics that we're going to be tackling over the next few weeks. One of which I'm quite looking forward to is sort of talking about whole sort of conference season, making the most of conferences, thoughts on the benefits, the costs, how you meet people, how you talk to people, all that kind of stuff. Because I think we've come at that from quite different angles. So that should be fun. That's probably going to go out in September, just in time for conference season. And but yeah, we'll be back in episode 25. With our normal links banter. Yeah, thanks for listening. If you do have any comments, you can find us on Twitter at Back to Front Show, somewhere on Facebook. We'll put it in the show notes. But yeah, let us know what you think. And if there's any topics you would like us to tackle, we'd love to know. So if you have come back to the Back to Front Show, if this is your first time listening, we thank you. Cheers.
Cheers.